I'm joined now by the columnist with the Sunday Times, David Quinn. David, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
And the reason I asked you in is I was surprised that the great sexual scandal of charities and so on, which is not just Haiti, and that's the one that's in the paper, I thought it was underreported by the Irish media. And I wonder what your thought was.
Well, I thought it was too. I mean, obviously it was huge in Britain. And it was huge in Britain because the Oxfam is an English charity originally and is headquartered there. And the British government gives lots of aid to Oxfam. And some of the workers caught up in the whole thing were, you know, English Oxfam workers. So it was a big English story and it was broken in the English media. But nonetheless, it's a big story by any standards.
Well, it's a big story also given Ireland's very strong position in world charitable aid.
Oxfam is here in this country. We have
Chokra, we have Gold, we have all sorts of stuff. Yeah,
all the rest of them. So we have a huge charity sector that works in these countries. And this was, as we know now, a scandal that wasn't limited to Oxfam. It was to be found in these other charities too. And of course, the scandal we're talking about, for maybe people who haven't really caught up with the story because there hasn't been much in the Irish media, is that aid workers in countries like Haiti were taking advantage of their positions of power in these disaster zones and these war-torn areas to basically rent prostitutes, some of whom may have been underage.
Yeah.
So massive exploitation. And then the thing was essentially, just like with Catholic Church, covered up. And, you know, people were being moved from one charity to another in a different part of the world to start off the same pattern all over again. And that's a pattern we're extremely familiar with from the Catholic Church, which is also, by the way, why the story should have been bigger here. Because if we really care about the problem of sex abuse, having learned from the Catholic, you know, from the example of the Catholic Church, we should be concerned about it everywhere.
Well, absolutely true. The reason I asked you, of course, to come in and talk about it is because it's very close to my heart in relation to Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been to Haiti best part of half a dozen times. I was a very early volunteer with Haven, went down there.
This post 2010, after the earthquake?
No, I went there before the earthquake. Mm. Did a television documentary that nobody wanted to watch. Then suddenly there's an earthquake and everybody wants a documentary. Mm. Then I went down after the earthquake and I've been down since. And here's the point, David, for people listening. Haiti is indisputably one of the poorest countries on earth.
Mm.
It has a massive earthquake and the world comes in and the world says, we pledge, we pledge, we pledge.
Mm.
First of all, only a fraction of the pledges ever reach the people who needed it. That was, so there was a financial scandal.
And that was obvious to you when you went there, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was 1.2 million or more people living under canvas in a country that before the earthquake was probably the poorest nation on earth. Now, why also? I was then looking at the Irish and, you know, sometimes we don't get enough about how good we are. Like, I was obviously working with a very small charity in Haven, like, and there were 400 volunteers. So there's 400 men and women down there building houses in 45 degrees centigrade, right? And we're down there. I wasn't too much building, it's okay. Mm-hmm. And they're down there and they're working their butts off.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, you see these other major groupings. Now, I think one of the things that we're getting wrong here is we're talking about charities. These major organisations aren't charities anymore. They're NGOs. And mm-hmm. a huge difference. Because Britain's given 0.7 of its GDP. We're given, I think, 0.5 of our GDP. So these charities aren't relying on you and me putting 10 bob in an envelope anymore. They're getting enormous money.
And 0.7 is the target that the UN sets for all the various countries. 0.07% of GNP or the GDP should go to.
Yeah. So they've got enormous money. Mm. And when you see them arrive, as I did, not just in Haiti, but principally, like, you know, I won't deride two of the most famous universities of Britain, but like you have these guys who come from high quality universities and they stroll in and what we have seen, the Oxfam website's incredible. The Oxfam website, I don't know if I've taken down recently, but a week ago, was actually saying that they were not issuing any guidelines on the use of prostitutes because they might be infringing the civil liberties of the workers. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did, yeah, and I wrote about it in the Sunday Times last weekend because it kind of stunned me. It stood out in a big way because if you're... So I think what they were doing in their code of conduct, and this code of conduct dates back to 2006. So what they were saying was, we discourage the practice of our staff using prostitutes in these areas, but to forbid it would be, as you say, a violation of their civil liberties. This was the view. So, therefore, when some of the workers were in fact using prostitutes, how could they think it was abuse when they actually don't prohibit it and think it's a violation of the civil liberties of their staff not to use prostitutes? Yeah. So, I mean, that just stunned me because, I mean, prostitution, even in the Western world, is almost inherently exploitative. I mean, why is it nearly always East Europeans, for example?
In this country.
And in other countries. Yes, I mean, Germany and all these youths, you know, sky-high brothels they've got there. It's nearly always from Eastern Europe and other countries. In Spain, it seems to be Africa and so on. So it's bad enough in the West. But in these countries, which are disaster or war-torn, and some of these people have nothing to sell but their bodies, okay, to actually then buy the body using the power you've got as an aid worker, in charge of the food, in charge of the money, and all the rest of it, in charge of the shelter, is just grotesque.
Although, David, one would have to say it has always been thus. I mean, this isn't about Haiti. This is Oxfam have admitted that every time they went into a stricken area, they had problems with abuse. Mm-hmm. They admitted it. In every country they went into, they fired people or disciplined people for abuse. And, I mean, We all will know Germany in 1945 at the end of the war when women's bodies were available for a packet of cigarettes. So abuse of people, and particularly women and particularly sex, has always been there.
But it's different when a code of conduct actually doesn't forbid it.
Yes.
Because it says that'll be a violation of civil liberties, therefore thinks there's nothing wrong per se with it. And therefore, as I say, doesn't forbid it. That's a real problem. So you've got this kind of Western notion of rights coming into these countries where, as you say, the example of World War II and numerous other examples say, when people are desperate, they will sell what they've got and they will sell what they think people will buy. And for a lot of young women, that's their bodies.
Yeah.
And then people buy them who are in positions of power. So soldiers in World War II,
correct,
who have their chocolate and their cigarettes and food parcels and all this sort of stuff. But like the Allied armies didn't say, it's your civil liberty. So we discourage it. But it's your civil liberty to do it. This is a different thing entirely, saying it's your civil liberty to do it. But that's just grotesque.
But what we see, because I saw it, what we see in stricken areas, and I was so proud of Haven, I must say, like 400 Irish men and women going down there, living cheek by jowl with those people and building houses for them. And then you knew what was going on. If you control money, mm-hmm, food and shelter, mm-hmm, then you are in an unbelievably strong position to abuse people.
Well, remember this
and
thing,
that's what aid workers are in.
Yeah, because remember this thing, Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's this pyramid, and at the bottom of the pyramid are your basic needs like food and shelter, and at the top are things like art. Okay, so when you've got all your basic needs satisfied, you can work way up to the things you actually really want to do, which is, you know, whatever, sport, art, etc.
Yeah.
So at the bottom of your hierarchy of needs is food and shelter and all the very basic things, and these are the things you need most of all. And so the power it gives you when you have access to these things and you can dole them out to whoever is just spectacular, and in war-torn areas.
But the other terrible thing that you also see, and when you mentioned hierarchy of needs, it reminded me in a different way. Like, you also had a hierarchy of abuse in Haiti. I remember these women who had nothing, you know, and they were living under tarpaulin, but they used to do our washing, right? Mm-hmm. And we would give them our washing, and they'd wash it in the river, and come back, and they get a dollar, you know, from us.
Mm.
And then they go outside where we were, our campsite, and other Haitians, invariably men, would beat them up and steal the money off them. And I remember there was a couple of Irish soldiers were down with us, and they sorted out, as only Irish soldiers can do, those men who were abusing the women.
Oh, fair play.
But abuse also is that, isn't it? There are levels of it almost. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, it's not just Oxfam. It would be unfair to single out Oxfam, even though it's getting most of the publicity, because it's been something that's been occurring across other aid agencies and the UN, by the way.
UN troops in Haiti.
UN troops in Haiti, Central African Republic and other countries. And so widespread abuse, including of children. And in fact, in Haiti, they uncovered that Sri Lankan soldiers, about 135 of them post the earthquake, had set up a sex ring involving 9 underage girls. And so they were all sent home, but nobody was ever prosecuted for it. The Associated Press did a story about a year ago where they investigated 22 UN peacekeeping missions and uncovered at least 2,000 cases of sex abuse by UN peacekeepers, including 300 of underage girls, which is to say child abuse, and that the UN just didn't tackle this properly. Nobody gets held accountable. A few years ago, there was a UN official, and he tried to expose some of this in the Central African Republic and got suspended for his troubles. Now, there's a pattern here, and again, you see, this is what kind of stuns and amazes me. The Catholic Church has been enormously badly damaged, and rightly so, by these scandals. It's not just because there were some priests abused children, it's because of the cover-ups and the fact that Father so-and-so got moved from this parish where he carried out abuse and again got moved to another parish and nobody gets told what his record is. And the church has been rightly enormously damaged. Now, you would imagine that these major institutions like the UN, which is an incredibly important worldwide institution, and these major charities would have learned from it. But clearly hasn't, because one of the first laws of any organisation seems to be protect your reputation.
Absolutely. But again, like in the Haiti thing, because I saw it, and why I don't like calling anymore some of these organisations charities, because, mm-hmm. you know, I remember like the Gold Mile out in Belfield, and we were all running around on Christmas Day and raising 10 quid. Those 400 volunteers for Haven all raised 2,000 or 3,000 from their friends and workmates to go there. But when 0.7 of the gross domestic product of a nation is given to an organisation, it's not a charity anymore. Mm-hmm. It doesn't want the widow's mite.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't need that because it gets so much money.
I mean, it still gets a certain amount of that, but it's an ever decreasing percentage of the money they're raising. And so that's why the British government has been able to say, we're going to withhold all the tens of millions we give you each year unless you clean up your act. And then you had somebody from the UN, I think she's the Women's High Commissioner or something, Penza or something her name is. I mentioned her in my column the other day, and she was saying, you can't destroy these organisations because of a few rotten apples, because they do good work, which is, of course, true, but they have to clean up their act. I mean, again, when you take the Catholic Church, I'm the last person to say burn the thing to the ground because of the scandals, but by the same token, it has had to clean up its act in a major way, and these other organisations have to as well. So if you believe in the UN, and if you believe in its basic mission, which is peace and development in the world, and you think this is a good thing, then you should be especially concerned that it cleans up its act, because there's been so many scandals involving the UN, by the way, not just these sex scandals, huge financial corruption scandals, for example, at the UN, and then all these countries pursuing their own self-interest in the General Assembly, and people bribing other people to get this, that and the other job. So every single scandal known to human nature has been there, but if you believe in it, and you believe in its ideals, your goal and aim should be to reform it. However, Irish politicians still put the UN up on an incredible moral pedestal as if none of these scandals have ever happened. And so we take these lectures from these visiting UN workers and commissioners and so on about, you know, reparation for various scandals in the past, and there doesn't seem to be any reparation for the people abused by these soldiers.
But it's the interesting thing, because Gold has such a great record in this country. I remember John O'Shea in the old days, and Conor Sparks and Gerry Sheehan, who were volunteers. I mean, for years O'Shea didn't take a penny, and they'd load up this airplane with stuff because they were a charity. You know, John Tracy was selling his running shoes at an auction, and Coughlin, and I remember Mats Wilander and McEnroe played tennis over here to raise money. They went down with the food, and they met the local priest or whatever, and they knew that what they were bringing down was going to where it was supposed to go.
What was the name of the priest years ago who was involved in the Biafra airlift, getting food into the area, and he teamed up with Freddie Forsyth, you know, the Day of the Jackal guy. And he became famous at the time. Like, I was a boy at the time, and I remember there was, you know, raising money in schools to, you know, for famine relief in those parts of the world. But you could be sure that, you know, I don't know what percentage of your money, probably 90% went directly towards food relief. Now, I don't know how much you had to bribe. Even then,
the problem, the bigger the organisation, the smaller percentage of its total revenue finds its way to where it's supposed to go.
Like, did you see evidence when you were in Haiti of having to basically grease the palms of local officials gangsters.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the great thing that, like Haven, to its everlasting credit, they went in and said, we're building houses here. And they did that. But then, of course, the understandable reaction is, hold on, we're breaking our butts here to build 50 houses. Mm-hmm. There's 1.2 million people living under canvas. So it's a natural reaction to say, if we build 500 houses, we're going to do better. But the problem then is you're moving into areas where size does not necessarily generate what it wants. I think you've done the whole area service, David. David Quinn is columnist with the Sunday Times. And once again, I think Irish media has been remiss because in some way we think we too must protect our Irish reputations. David Quinn, columnist, Sunday Times, thank you so much for joining me.